It's the great Dante Read Through.
It's the great Dante Read Through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital.
Today we're reading Battleship Potemkin, found in Progs 1213 to 1220.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Edie.
So, hello, irregulars, and welcome back to the Great Dante Read-Through.
Welcome.
So, we're starting Battleship Potemkin.
Yes.
This is a dense story.
It is.
We have a lot to get through.
And I have many feelings about this story.
You have a lot of feelings about it. Well, welcome back to Simon Art, first of all. It's been a while since we've seen your art.
Yeah, for reasons entirely under my own control.
Yes, yes. We discussed that last episode.
We did get into that.
But it's nice to see you back in Dante again.
Yeah.
We are opening in 2669. War still rages on. The Romanov Rebellion threatened to escalate things from a civil war confined to the Russian heartland into a full-scale global conflict. And we see a battle scene we open on with the two warring flags side by side.
Yeah.
The Romanov double-headed eagle and whatever the Makarovs have.
Makarov raven.
It's a raven. Oh, is that? Oh, that's why they have the raven corps.
Bingo, raven corps.
Okay, yeah, I just picked that up. I just thought it was kind of like a badass name, you know, like the Raven Corps, you know? Like,
yeah. No, that's what it says. Their heraldic bird is a raven, apparently.
So we've got Gryffindor and Ravenclaw fighting each other.
It's before Harry Potter.
Oh, it's definitely. Well, actually, no, we're not before Harry Potter anymore. Harry Potter, I think, was like 97 or something like that. Was it started?
Certainly before I read it.
Yeah. So I think Dante began before Harry Potter. Yeah, but where we are now is not. Because we're in like the year 2000 now, I think. 2000, 2001 at this point in the progs.
Someone of that.
Some listener will tell
us.
I've got it on the list. You've got it on the spreadsheet? Okay.
Note.
I was going to do a no prize, but I guess I won't.
Really? Well, you could do that if you want.
The imperial dynasties, from the cabinet noir to the Chinese triumvirate are under pressure to basically choose a side.
Mm-hmm.
So those dynasties
sounds
we
familiar.
Saw
wow.
from the well, Moscow
could,
duelists.
Could that be plucked from today's news?
It is very strange to be reading about Russia at war right now, as we remarked in the last episode. So we get a little bit of levity here because we revisit our old friend, the Mad King Windsor McRae of Britannia.
Can I just say that's a three-level compound joke?
Yes, I think we talked about that before
Did
too,
we?
But go for
right.
it.
So Henry Windsor McRae, so it's a reference to Windsor McKay, who's a famous comic book artist from the dawn of comics.
Little Nemo.
Henry Windsor, so Windsor being obviously the royal family of the UK, and McRae being, or Cray being a famous criminal gang. So this is Robbie referencing again that royalty always descends from
our
criminals.
Crooks.
Yeah, so royal families are always bandits at some level of your
history.
Well,
and we will really get into that with this story as well. We really go there. So apparently the Mad King is a loud sympathizer for the Romanovs and is being sentenced to death by the Tsar for treason. And he calls his executioner Batman, which I love.
Yeah, it's because he's got pointy.
Because he's got a pointy cowl on.
Can I just point out there's a lot of stupid jokes in this splash here of London. So there's the London, the O2 Dome, which is got 3,000 or bust on it. For some reason, it's behind
Tower
Bridge.
Well, I think they must have been just building the Millennial Dome when you were drawing this. Yeah. I saw that too.
We've done lots of dumb jokes in here.
There's another one in there I was going to ask you about.
New Scotland Yard, which has got the Bobby's helmet on it for some reason.
There's another one in here.
Bovril.
Oh, I saw the BBC is on the blimp, which was interesting.
I like the mosque front and center, because that makes sense.
Oh, and what is this? Hold on. It says...
Bovril. Hot beefy Bovril. It's a brand of... It's like a Marmite.
It looked like a Marmite jar, I was going to say.
Beef extract. Okay. So it's a kind of
on one of the marquees on the top of a building. We're talking about the shot. We should explain to listeners what we're talking about.
It's an
aerial shot of, I guess this is, what is this, Britannia?
Yeah, this is London.
London, right. Britannia.
Now, there's a problem. I'm having problems with the art. There's some technical issue, and I'm not sure what's happened, but the line art is kind of like thickened.
Yeah, I noticed that, and that's not how you originally drew it.
No, because the thing is, I haven't really seen the colored version of this artwork for a long time. I haven't really looked at it, but I have seen the original artwork from it, and it's not this thick and heavy looking. I don't know what happened. I'm not sure where it happened in the production line, whether it was my scan that was crappy. It's possible. Gary wouldn't have changed the resolution of the scan.
We'd have to look at the.
Gary was computerized.
Are you saying these were in the original progs? It would look like
this
too.
Yeah, yeah, no. I think it's
not like a
wrong.
Transfer to the Hachette version
no,
or to the
it's
digital
wrong,
version.
Because I remember it being commented on in the readers' column at the time. There's something wrong with the way the artwork's been reproed, and it might be my fault. I don't know.
Is it just this story, or does it persist?
It persists, I think.
Does it?
I don't know. I took.
Well, now we're not in your heart anymore. Never mind.
Later,
we'll look.
Yeah, we'll see it, but I don't know. I'm a little bit unhappy about that.
Okay.
Anyway,
I'm sorry, babe.
One of the things I'm unhappy about.
All right.
We'll get into the other ones.
We will get there. So Executioner has a cowl on, so the Mad King thinks he's Batman, and the Raven Corps, one of the Raven Corps there, gives the king the option to abdicate to Marie Anne, the princess, and swear loyalty to the Tsar. Yes,
she's wearing a baby spice, the bustier. And,
it's not baby spice. It's ginger spice.
Okay, sorry.
Goodness gracious, Simon.
One of them. This was at the height of like Cool Britannia. This was being done, so it's like we're kind of riffing on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cover for this episode is done by Fraser Irving. Which is Dante trying to smooch the princess here. And I own that cover. I got it off Fraser at the time. So there. One day I'll make a million of it.
Oh, yeah.
Or something.
Well, yeah, I was saying she's looking great in her Union Jack bustier astride like a chess lion.
Yes.
It's
based on the Lancier lions, which
I didn't know they
seen.
Came in other animals. I thought it was just chess horses, but we got a chess lion.
So we've got the Lancier lions from Trafalgar Square here, which is kind of what that's from.
Okay.
And also the Lion King, probably. So, I'm watching The Lion King a lot of the time.
So basically, he can abdicate his throne to Marie Anne, the princess, right? Or he's going to be killed. So he leans his head down on the chopping block, and there's already blood on it, by the way. Yeah, so they're they're straight up killing people out here, on the regular out in Trafalgar Square. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the Batman executioner throws the axe not at the king, but at the unfortunate Raven Corps soldier, and then rips off his hooded cowl to reveal it's Nikolai Dante.
Yay.
The Potemkin also flies in here. And I think I may have said this before, that the Potemkin really reminds me of the Omu trilobites in Nausicaa, Valley of the Wind.
Yeah. I mean, that's because of the red,
the shape of it too. Yeah. It's got
it,
that.
It wasn't. I don't know if I'd seen Nausicaa at that point, but that wasn't, I mean, the coloring makes that obvious.
Yeah.
It wasn't definitely. It was, my idea of it with the design was to make a three-dimensional battleship.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if you took a battleship and rotated it in three dimensions in a 3D CAD package, you would end up with something that looked kind of like spiky from all angles, because it's supposed to one function in three dimensions, not two. That was kind of my thinking on that. I like the fact that Gary's faded the battleship Potemkin out at this point. He's faded it back, which makes it look bigger, which is important because that's something we'll do more later on. It's not something we're doing at this point a lot because there's a lot of tonal problems with the artwork, I find, which is something that we kind of worked around later as we get better with the technology.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you're sort of making this change into computer coloring at this point. Yeah.
Well, Gary's just shifted to digital at this point.
So there's going to be some...
Yeah, so it still looks a bit like his hand stuff. Yeah, Gary was, just to remind everybody, Gary was doing this all by hand with an airbrush originally. So he's still managing to get some of the kind of spray effects and spatter effects, and there's some texturing going on there, some of which I like, some of which I'm not so keen on. It's all being it's being worked out as we go. It's very heavily saturated to my mind.
Yes,
again,
it is.
I don't know how. Again, it's not. We were kind of working out as we go, and I think maybe the oversaturation. This again, something we dealt with better later on.
I noticed when I was looking, because I was reading this in the Hachette book.
Yeah.
When we were getting ready for this episode, and you were reading it in the digital copies online, and I don't know if your digital copies were being affected by the way the colors are being affected by your screen.
No.
That I was looking at in your computer just now, but it looked even more like primary hyper. Is that just how it looks in the digital versions, or was that your screen resolution?
No, digital version I've got. It's a pirate.
Oh, you heard it here first,
it's a
folks. Oh, no. Well, see,
okay.
So all the more reason to actually invest in the better,
get the
true digital,
versions. It's better.
They're not that expensive.
To my defense, I downloaded the pirate version a long time ago because it was available, and it was digital. Somebody was out there scanning it.
Was it even available from 2000 AD digital at
this
that time?
It being available online. So I downloaded it because it was like just useful to have digitally, and it was better than, because it was lettered. My copies aren't lettered. I don't get the lettered copies back. And I didn't want to sit down and scan all the progs myself, and somebody else was doing it. So I went, thanks, dude, for pirating my comic.
Thanks, comic Napster.
So yeah, whoever you are out there, thanks for doing that. yeah, I think generally speaking, it's probably a good thing, because I don't think we lost any sales on basis of that. That's not how I think. I mean, piracy is a complicated issue. We're not going to get into that here.
Let's not get into that now.
But
we've got enough to cover in this story.
It did benefit me because it was practically useful. And it's still the copy I have, which is the pirate copy.
Okay. I'm just going to say this is a dense story.
Yes. Okay.
We are not even through page one of my notes. I have 7 pages of notes, and we are 11 minutes into this podcast. So, Simon.
Go.
Okay. We're moving along. So, anyways... here comes the Nicolai Dante is the executioner, and then the ship comes in, the battleship comes in over the horizon, the Battle of Britannia ensues, which apparently has little strategic significance. So they sent in the irregulars to fight instead of their troops, which seems to be a common theme. It's like, this battle doesn't really matter. We'll just send the irregulars.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, the battle doesn't really matter, but the irregulars are thrown in, and yet they all seem to survive and they seem to win every single time. So they're like, okay. So they're not garbage.
You can't keep really calling them the Bad News Bears, can you,
really,
at a certain point? And they come in on rocket packs, and Elena is there destroying Nelson's column. Elena takes out Nelson's column, and our penis ships come flying through the air.
Lots of phallic representation.
Yes. What's their actual name? The
Strikehawks.
Strikehawks. Mm-hmm. Penis ships. I just keep calling them penis ships. Nelson falls off his column and crushes some more Ravencore, and Flintlock is here. So is Spatchcock, and so fart jokes aren't far behind.
Mm-hmm.
King McCrae.
Hysterical comedy duo.
Yes, still in his fishnet shirt and Y-front tighty whities, is trying to outlaw guns, wants to solve disputes with pie throwing instead.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, buddy.
Who can argue with that?
I mean, fair, especially custard pie. I like a custard pie.
Putin versus...
In comes Princess Marie Anne on her chess lion to attack Dante. And I didn't know they could like use their claws. It's articulating and attacking him. That's useful.
It's a British innovation.
Yes. And we last saw the princess and King McCrae in episode 6 of this podcast.
Yeah.
And the princess was being sentenced to the Tower of London for poisoning the king to drive him mad, even though none of that actually happened because Dante made it all up.
Yes.
That was really bad. Dante really did her wrong. She basically was like, my father's going crazy. We're going to let him show how crazy he is on national television so that I can take the throne and actually like rule and not be off my rocker. And Dante just kind of likes the king. So he decides to frame her.
It suited their interests to keep him on the throne. Yeah, political
maneuver. Yeah. Anyway, so Dante chops the head off her lion with his bio blade, and then her Mad King father tells her she's going back to the tower. Poor Marie Anne.
It's a nice rendering on the last panel here of Dante's face. I was like, that's the thing we picked
Dante up. Dante kind of looking back at the destruction of London.
There, which is actually Gary, and I didn't do that. It's very nice.
So Dante, after this, they basically, the Potemkin somehow, like, saves London. We don't really see the part of the Potemkin kind of securing London. We just see this one little corner of the battle. But they do, and they secure London, and then Dante is summoned to a council of war with the family. Mm-hmm. And we see the family Romanov posing for a photo. Ugh, Dante looking like a jerk. You're upset at this picture.
I hate it.
Well, you hate it so much.
It's garbage. It was drawn badly. Sorry, Ross. I know you own this page and I know you're happy about it, but I'm not happy about it.
Do you think Ross even listens to this podcast?
No, Ross Hendry. It's not Ross. There's
not the other Ross.
One of the number of Rosses.
Different Ross. Sorry. Ross
Hendry. Hi, Ross. Chubanicus on Twitter. Anyway,
well, he likes it, so maybe you're being hard on yourself.
Yeah, I know. I'm just unhappy with
a lot
of things.
Okay. And Dante's very much looking like a jerk in that photo, I just wanted to say. We have a comment from Maxim Turgenev, talking about kind of like the Romanovs and their bloodline. And she ends saying Dante's reluctance to accept his father's name was mystifying. Mm-hmm. Was it really? At that time, the name of Romanov was hailed across the land. No one foresaw the curse it would become. So
foreshadowing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Dimitri, a council of war, and Dimitri and Jocasta, mommy, dearest, are frosty as ever. Mm-hmm. They draw their children around a table to talk about the war so far and say that wartime, Dimitri says wartime suits
something
them.
Something I had an issue with Gary about, and this is a thing that he does, which is like he makes women's makeup really lurid. Really bright, really bright lipstick, really bright eyeshadow. And it's like, Gary, tone it down. But in actual fact, he's been proven right because, like, I don't know, what if not the last 10 years on Instagram, it's just like, whoa, women's makeup got crazy. So I was like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, Gary, he was seeing into the future.
You were right, Gary.
Listen.
Maybe I was just like, just the future. I wasn't ready for it.
You weren't.
Carry on.
There's a stalemate basically with the Imperial forces happening because the strategic sites of the Empire are still under the control of the Tsar. Right. Lulu says that privately the folks on the ground controlling those sites for the Tsar offer support to the Romanovs, but publicly they still back the Tsar and will only come out on the side of the Romanovs if the Romanovs offer a decisive victory of some kind.
Yeah.
And Nastasia gets feral and says she wants to tear some throats out. And she's kind of almost shape-shifting, which is not a thing that she does.
No, she's got teeth.
Okay. She just kind of looked like she was going like wolfy to me.
She's snarling. All right.
You don't look like a wolf when you do that, though.
I don't have big sharp teeth.
Okay. All right. You also don't have big puffy lips like she does.
No, I don't know that either.
Okay. So Andreas has apparently pulled off an espionage coup by seducing the St. Emmanuel's Holy Sisters of Salvation into becoming spies, but only the ones under 30 because he has standards.
Continues to be a dick.
We're going
to
have some wonderful, terrible, like, ageist, you know, like, fat-phobic jokes coming up in here. Yeah. So just try. We're going to move past him. We're going to acknowledge him. We're going to move right past him.
Mm-hmm.
Dimitri wants to plot a strategic or symbolic victory to rally those who control these strategic sites of the Empire to the Romanov cause.
Yep.
So that's kind of the whole gambit here.
Mm-hmm.
Constantine apparently suggests New Moscow, the Tsar's most heavily fortified stronghold, and the Potemkin will lead the assault with Constantine acting as commander of the Romanov Penis Eagles, a.k.a. Strike Force.
Strike Hawks.
Constantine is all excited to work with his mommy, Jocasta, who has apparently requested Nikolai as her personal guard. Burn, Constantine. So then we cut to on board the Potemkin, and Elena and Dante are debating whether he should be drinking so much and dulling his senses. Dante says he needs to dull them because he hates war, but he sure signed up to do it pretty quick. So
pretty,
I don't know what this speech is about.
Yeah, I know. He's not exactly been shying away from it.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he still has these like emo moments. It's just like self-delusion. we will come to see that this is very clearly self-delusion as we move forward. Constantine appears and gets into it with Dante and is annoyed that the papers are calling him the hero of the Romanovs. Mm-hmm. He brings up some of Dante's defeats, talks about leading his regiment to their deaths because of his own pride. What is he even talking about there?
I don't know, because nobody died.
Because nobody died. That's what I'm thinking of.
Nobody important die anyway, so that's kind of...
Okay. He said he executed an enemy officer begging for surrender.
Apparently.
I don't remember that either. And then has the gall to mention Ingrid, the late Juliana's late maid. Says he seduced, abandoned, and broke her heart. I mean, this was all for Constantine, well, so whatever.
I think the thing to remember here, which is mentioned later on, which I think is kind of prescient in many ways, is that propaganda is what this war is all about. And it's not really about the thing that's happening. It's the thing about the story that's being told about the thing that's happening. Mm-hmm. And Constantine's obviously well on board with that. And Jocasta is instrumental in that. So it's all about perceptions.
Yes, this is true. And he's having a go at Dante here. So he's hitting him where it hurts, right? Mm-hmm. And he reveals to Dante that he, Constantine, was the one to have killed Juliana, which I think you dropped last episode. You mentioned that, and we actually hadn't gotten there yet. So we just need to watch that. And by we, I mean you, because I haven't read this yet.
Spoiler casting.
But anyway, this is a big moment. He's saying he killed Juliana, and he says he burned her alive, and says he'd like to do the same to Jenna. And so, of course, Dante clocks him with his wine bottle, which is apparently of expensive vintage Romanova Sauvignon. 2652 year.
Fair enough.
And so they fight. And Elena's...
Now we know what to order when we get to the future.
That's right. That 2652 is a pricey bottle. Elena jumps in and is like, you attack one of us, you attack all of us, right, guys? And I love this moment because the rest of the irregulars kind of shuffle around in the background like, is that the time? Like, I got to be somewhere. Do not want to help. And Constantine sort of force slaps Elena. I don't really know what's going on there. Because he has, fire powers, right?
I don't know exactly.
But then we see, force powers?
It's very vague. Okay. I mean, I don't know. That maybe should be colored. It's like an explosion there.
Propulsive, compulsive.
Should be maybe an explosion color. I don't know.
Okay.
Storytelling is problematic when you've got more than one person working on it and we're not necessarily talking to each other.
Fair. So he bats away Elena. And warns her not to throw her life away on Dante, which is good advice, actually, from Constantine.
Advice for everybody.
And, of course, Arcady goes tattling to Big Brother Andreas and Sister Lulu that there's a fight, sibling fight. So all the siblings gather to watch Constantine and Dante throw each other around and to wager on the winner.
I liked the last panel there was with Lulu holding a pipe. That's a church warden pipe, and I was determined to make that a thing.
A church warden pipe.
It's very narrow, long, narrow.
Oh, yes. Pipe. Yes.
I was a thing which I...
Sort of like an opium pipe almost.
Yeah, something I wanted to make a thing, but it didn't really happen to be a thing.
Well, who did you want to make it a thing for?
I don't know. Cultural inference at all.
You wanted this to catch on among 2000 AD readers?
Yeah, like women looking long.
You wanted all the women who were reading 2000 AD at this time to start smoking?
Both of them.
All five of them. Sorry for all you wonderful female 2000 AD readers that were reading this in the 2000s. We don't want to erase you.
Came and talked to me at conventions. It was very nice.
Thank you very much. You met them. That's cool.
Yes.
Yeah, that had to feel cool. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't know. Maybe they did smoke those pipes. I don't know.
There's a twinkling going on here. What the heck is that? Gary's put some star effects on the coloring. I'm like, not about that.
Okay. Mm. Well, I mean, it's fighty.
Fighty.
So we're doing he's taken some liberties in the fighty scenes. Constantine kicks Dante through a glass wall kind of into the pod bay. What would you call this area?
Storage. Ship storage area.
But it's you can get to the outside. It's like launching ships to into space. So into the air. It's
an area for looting and unloading things.
Then Dante hits Constantine with a large heavy chain, which looks painful. Mm-hmm. And Constantine gets the upper hand, of course, and is about to toss Dante into the cold void of space. It kind of looks like they're in the atmosphere up here.
This whole thing's been kind of...
Are they just like over a city? Okay.
So that should be kind of like fields down below.
Okay, so it's not in space. It almost looks like they're in space. Okay, so he's gonna throw him just to his death, right?
Yeah, right.
From above. And Jocasta shows up. Mommy Jocasta shows up and tells him to put Dante down. Mm-hmm. And Constantine is like, why do you care? He's a bastard and not yours. Mm-hmm. Which is totally a fair question. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Constantine mentions Dante will have to stab him in the back, mm-hmm. which a hero like him would never do. And that feels like some heavy foreshadowing.
Heavy. It's even like Constantine's in shadow there.
Yeah. So Dante then goes back to his room to lick his wounds and watches news coverage of Jenna leading an assault on Kragnadar, which is supposed to be neutral territory. And apparently the city was razed to the ground and men and women and children slaughtered. But Jocasta comes in and reminds Dante that this is the propaganda arm of the Romanov media empire, and history is written by the victors.
Yeah, there's some very heavy coloring here, but the Dante's bachelor pad is basically like, seems to be like porn and giant TV screens, which is kind of on point.
Really. Yeah, it's really on point. It almost looks like he's in like a gaming chair, too.
Yeah, I think
so. You know?
Playing Call of Duty in there or something.
In his underwear. Yeah. He's in his boxers.
Call of Duty 705.
Yeah.
The Russian War. Yeah, because there's some very fine hatching on the face here, and it's kind of blobbing together. I'm not happy about this. And the ship kind of flying away from Potemkin is very...
Very dark.
Dense, very dense.
It's very, very dark,
yeah,
yes.
Not, yeah, it's not working. Anyway.
Anyway.
Sorry. Technical
quote. Jocasta and Dante head off in a penis jet together towards Archangel. This place called Archangel, which Dante tells us is enemy territory. And apparently Jocasta has an imperial ID code to get past security. Curious.
Wily.
Dante queries Jocasta, but she says she wants to keep some secrets from him for now and says they're going to stop the war. So she says Dante has been brusque with her since the hunting party and claims having her brother Dimitri's babies was done scientifically, which is a relief.
Yeah.
And you really took a long time to tell us that, Robbie.
Yeah.
We were just here thinking that Dimitri was doing his whole, like, thing.
Yeah.
Like.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You just took a long time to tell us that. Anyway.
Mercifully, he finally did.
It's like he knew it, and maybe someone said something like, why are this brother and sister? Like, and she was not into it, and this is just awful. And he's like, oh, no, that was supposed to be test tube. Did I not say that? Let me clarify.
The next couple of pages were in my portfolio for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I quite like them.
The fight that's about to come up.
Fight.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, Dante is aghast, but Jocasta says that she did it for the name of Romanov. And while Dante objects to this, she wisely points out that's what Dante himself is doing, staying with the Romanovs despite it being against everything he stands for.
Yeah.
Which is a fair point.
Mm-hmm.
I'd argue Dante stands for nothing but self-preservation most of the time, but I suppose he does have some principles, and one of those was definitely not to enlist in a war on behalf of his, like, shitty bio family.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we get a good fight here because they land in Archangel and are confronted by our old shapeshifter enemy, Pyre.
Pyre.
Whom Dante fires at as he shapeshifts into a saber-toothed alien wolf thing.
Yeah, it's like an aardwolf. I think that's why I was inspired by an aardwolf.
What's an aardwolf?
It's kind of like a giant fox, in between a fox and a wolf, kind of like quite thin thing. It's quite cool looking.
That's cool. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, you can check them out.
It's a very cool looking thing. Aardwolf. How do you spell that?
That's A-A-A-A-R.
Like an aardvark?
Yeah, I think so.
Aardwolf.
I think that's what it is. I'm not sure. You can maybe correct me. This color is not that way. It's usually gray.
Okay.
I think they're sort of from the northern climes.
And then he shapeshifts from the aardwolf into some kind of hideous giant worm sarlacc thing.
Yes.
Before the Tsar calls him off and slings an arm around Jocasta.
Ooh.
What? Apparently Jocasta and the Tsar are frenemies who are in love or something? What?
Ooh.
We have a shot of them young and in love that's kind of superimposed on their current forms.
Mm-hmm.
It's no coincidence they look like Jenna and Dante in this shot.
No coincidence at all.
But, you know, because they're young, I would actually quibble with Gary here, though I'm sure he didn't realize that it should have been a blonde goatee there, not a black one like Dante. He had blonde hair when he was young.
Is a bit off
he's supposed to have a blonde.
It should be tonally with the, if it's a fade into a sort of like sky thing, it should all be in the red color.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, you know, you get the idea, and I like the framing, and I like that, you know, it echoes Jenna and Dante, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, narratively good. And so In any event, these two, Jocasta and the Tsar, abscond to an imperial carriage to talk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jocasta proposes a union between Dante and Jenna.
Mm.
And that's going to somehow solve the war. She's going to marry Dante and Jenna.
Worth a try.
Okay. And the Tsar gets angry. Like, they killed my child. There is no peace. I'll burn the Romanovs to the ground. And, like, you know, he doesn't care that much about Juliana. He'd
have thrown his own kid into a fire. I'm saying.
He would have totally Thanos'd his daughter off a cliff, like, without even thinking about it. Yeah. He doesn't even remember when their birthdays are. Come on.
No. Or who their mother is.
Do we know who their mother is?
I don't remember.
Have we ever seen the mother?
I've never drawn that. Certainly, maybe John did. I don't know.
We'll have to keep an eye out for for Jenna's mom. So Dante stands guard outside the carriage. Pyre threatens him because, of course, he threatens him. That's what Pyre does.
Yep.
And inside the carriage, Jocasta and the Tsar can't come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
The Tsar wants Jocasta to stay with him, but she won't abandon her kids, her awful, terrible incest kids who she never sees.
Yes.
But she won't abandon them.
Because.
And we're supposed to care.
Well, you know.
We're supposed to believe she cares, I should say.
It's complicated.
I mean, I guess it's complicated. I don't know.
The thing is, you're put into a binary situation and you're asked to choose between two horrible solutions, and it's like, what are you supposed to do? There's no third way. Nobody's presenting a third way. You know, we're living in very polarized times right now, and so people are like having to choose between one way or the other way, and they don't feel like it.
Mm.
You know, it's an awkward situation. Not necessarily everybody's horrible, but they're having to make unpleasant choices.
Anyway, it's got an air of tragedy, the whole situation, as these two apparently loved each other. Mm-hmm. And Jocasta makes to leave, saying they couldn't end the war after all. And Dante says, maybe we can, and puts his bio blade to the Tsar's throat. Mm-hmm. And Jocasta is pissed, but the Tsar talks Dante down, saying his death will only accelerate the war, which is probably true, and make Jenna fight all the harder to avenge him until Dante will have his blade at Jenna's throat.
Hmm.
And so he does not kill the Tsar here.
Yeah.
And the Tsar leaves, and Dante tells Jocasta that he thought she'd have better taste in men. And I'm like, why? Why would you think that? Like, what up to this point? But anyway, I guess he's just trying to, like, get a dig in on her a little bit.
Nice, big, tall Frank Miller panel at the end there.
Yes. Mm. With at the bottom, we have a little, the forms of Jocasta and Dante down there in the snow.
Okay, so next episode, next page.
You've got a lot of mappage. I was going to say, okay, so we're apparently in month 9 of the war right now, which is useful information. Mm-hmm. And the opposing sides were locked in siege and trench warfare. There you go. You love that land war stuff in the future here, Simon. Now we've got trench warfare to add to it. From the Gulf of Finland to the
Caucasus Mountains.
The savagery increasing with every battle.
That's where our Caucasian people come from.
There you go. That's where we all are from.
Apparently.
And we've got Franco-Germania.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, what else do we have in here? Yeah,
there's some jokes in there, but the problem there's is that the line work is clumped up a bit. A lot of the hand lettering, which is terrible, and I was not using a computer at this stage, and I should have been, is kind of clumped up, and you can't read it.
Yeah. Italia, Britannia.
And there's a big joke here, Mare Austriaco. Now, I was at the time living in Austria, so I drew this story while living in Austria. So the fact of the Austrian Sea is a joke because Austria, of course, is landlocked. So the fact there's a sea there right now means something really, really bad happened to Austria.
Right. Okay. And we again see the raven fighting the double-headed eagle. Yes.
And there's a joke up on the right here, the Aral Desert, which of course is where the Aral Sea used to be, and that's a joke about environmental devastation,
which is prescient.
Yeah.
So Imperial agents reported that rebel forces, elated after their victory in Vladigrad, were massing for a major campaign of attrition, and the Tsar concentrated his forces around St. Petersburg, reasoning that the Romanovs would attempt to wrest their ancient ancestral homeland from his hands, which I think is the first time we're hearing that, right? I don't think we knew that before this.
Probably not.
If I am wrong, please correct me on our Twitter account at TGDRpod, or, you know, elsewhere that you manage to contact me, and we will no prize you if, but I believe this is the first time that we're hearing that. I was like, ancestral homelands, what? So, Moskva.
Moscow,
And so... So here we are, and we're seeing the Face Palace from above, and some explosions near the Face Palace. Then we cut to the Imperial Air Command in Moscow, where they're attempting to locate and intercept the rebel Romanov forces. And the Potemkin shows up. Yeltsin's liver, they exclaim, as the Potemkin shows up, which I really liked.
I think Yeltsin was still alive at this point.
Yeltsin's liver. It's a great... exclamation. On the Potemkin, Dante offers to give the irregulars a kick in the ass if they're afraid to jump off the battleship to paratroop into battle, and makes another crack about Ursa's weight. Yay! Will you please stop that, Robbie? Please, please stop. Does he stop? Or 20
years ago.
Do you keep doing this?
20 years
ago. Okay, Robbie of the past, please stop.
I don't remember.
Okay. Spatchcock offers to be Elena's pimp, and she tosses him off the ship. Rightfully so. The rest of the irregulars follow them, and fire up their jetpacks. Two of the irregulars wonder where Captain Dante is, then correct it to Captain Romanov, and grouse that he doesn't lead by example anymore and is probably hanging back from the fight. But here comes Dante. He's actually aboard a penis jet, and he swoops in to draw fire from the paratrooping irregulars. And Elena somehow kills... somehow kills the Makarov Air Command general. She's just sort of like, I'm not quite sure how she gets on the bridge there.
I think they blow a hole in something.
They blow a hole in something and we don't see it. Because there's like a really cool fight here and people are sort of fighting midair and then she's just like on the bridge. Okay.
Dog fighting. I think this is pretty much the stuff that John Burns did not want to draw. So that's
dog fighting. So you didn't want to draw war. He didn't want to draw dog fighting. So you're like trading off.
I did the dog fighting bit.
Did you have fun drawing it?
It was okay. It's a bit silly. I mean, I look at the dynamics of it. It's like it's very hard to do. You look at some the way someone like Ian Kennedy can draw dogfighting airplanes, and it's incredible. He does it really beautifully, and I'm not as good at it. And it's kind of lots of tricks and stupid things that probably would have turned any human being flying that plane into jelly. But, you know, hey-ho. I should have sat down with a lot more Kennedy artwork and looked at it, because... Ian was, of course, the master of this. But I'd never drawn a dogfight before, so I was kind of working it out. This is probably just like vestigial stuff was picked up from reading Commando comics when I was a kid. Anyway, lots of
explosions. I like it. I mean, it looks good.
Yeah.
I think it looks good. It looks very credible.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so Dante announces over the comms that he's not Captain Dante anymore. And Elena refers to him as Captain Romanov. What is going on here?
Identity.
Okay. So that seals it, I guess. And she secured their takeover of Air Command. And Dante does a lot of fancy maneuvering, shooting down a Raven Wing while singing Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Come fly with me.
As you do.
As you do. But wait. As Dante or Captain Romanov does a victory barrel roll, here comes the floating space egg. It's the Imperial Palace. Which apparently has gun batteries that can extend from its sides, which I don't think we've ever seen that before.
It was never designed to do
that.
I'm like going, wait, how can I do that? And I'm like, okay, they're going to have to like work somehow.
Yeah, they just sort of appear there. Kind of
like slashes.
It was kind of a cool reveal. I was into it.
It works.
Yeah. And so Dante goes kamikaze towards the space egg, and the Tsar commands the numerous batteries to all fire on him. And his penis jet takes some real damage.
I got happy with how the destruction happens.
It's pretty intense.
I was getting quite good at like destruction of machinery at this point.
Well, you had lots of experience with it.
Tons.
Dante radios the Potemkin, says he's coming in like Flynn, which is nice. We get the Errol Flynn reference here in our Swashbuckley story.
I kind of regret here, because this sort of he's flying into the engine bay there, which I'm sure is like probably happened in like Babylon 5 or one of these shows. What should have happened is like the destruction should have been so great that basically at the end of a long trail of wreckage, there should have been just Dante curled up in a chair, and that's all that's left. But I didn't do that. So I was like,
Well,
Never mind.
So yeah, he manages to crash land there, and mm-hmm. I just love the salty crest here. You can open your eyes now, Dante. You're still in one piece, as I'm sure the world will be delighted to learn. I love a salty crest. I do. Meanwhile, we get a nice aerial view of St. Petersburg, which is on fire in many key places, but mostly intact.
Lots of noodling.
And the space egg floats over the view with its battle gun still extended. That's a great panel you did there, hun.
Mm-hmm.
That's like not. It's like a barely that's, a half that's, page.
So this is exactly where I could, if I was doing it now and I had using the computer more intelligently, I'd be able to do like more tonal gradation to make a aerial perspective to give that thing more depth and less make it less cluttered.
Mm.
It's very dense. Unfortunately, the way that the lines are clumping up means it's even more dense. So it doesn't really look quite right for me. Anyway. Yeah.
I think it still looks good.
Thanks, baby.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. I mean, I'm biased, of course, but I liked it when I came to it.
We're still learning. That's the thing. We're still learning when doing this.
Well, I think that's really relevant is that, you know, they're going to be growing pains as you go from a physical coloring, you know, pen and ink and paper and airbrushing, you know, process to a digital one.
Yeah.
So
long ago now.
So, yeah, this is like, this is over 20 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Meanwhile, we get a nice aerial view of St. Petersburg. I already said that.
Mm-hmm.
And back on board the Tsar and Jocasta fight over video chat. And they call each other arrogant, ego-driven, and Constantine jumps in where he's not wanted to threaten the Tsar.
How dare you threaten my mummy?
Yeah. Mm. Meanwhile, we remember that Jocasta was talking with the Tsar about praying. When they last saw each other, the Tsar reminds her of this. They were in the carriage together. She prayed they'd not see each other again because they'd be staring death in the face. Very ominous. And she tells the Tsar to show her no mercy. And he says she's finally learned to wear the Romanov name with pride. And unleashes his gun battery at the Potemkin. He's going for it. And the resulting explosions rock the ship and badly wound Jocasta. I thought this was it for Jocasta at this moment. We had all this foreshadowing about her dying. Constantine's getting upset and pretending to have a soul for like 5 minutes. I was like, she is dead. But like, spoiler alert, she is not dead. She totally makes it through.
She does.
Constantine knows there's something weird going on with the Tsar and his mommy, kind of like, you know, just before she gets shot up. He's kind of like, what's going on with you two? And something about...
Wait, is that my real daddy?
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking this whole time, is Constantine the Tsar and Jocasta's baby.
No.
But we don't know he's not.
No, he's not.
I was really like...
I mean, that would have been kind of cool, but no, it's not.
I was I totally thought that's what was going on here. Because they're both so like ruthless and like mean and like...
square jawed.
And they're big. And I was like,
Dimitri obviously isn't, as we're about to discover. Right.
And he's so much... like, he's like clearly a lot older than a couple of his siblings. So it's like, you know. And I was actually really sad that it turns out that he's not his kid. I was really rooting for that. Anyway. So Constantine tells Dante to get his mom to safety and like the recovery wing of the battleship, I guess. And then he makes all kinds of attack commands to the Potemkin crew and says, today we crush the conqueror, as his face lights up with kind of like white flame. And Dante carries Jocasta away from everything. And she tells Dante the war is all her fault, which I still don't really understand how that is the case. But anyways...
Yeah, I can see why she thinks that.
I guess. Dante tries to argue that at least she attempted to stop the war before, and she tells him there's so much he doesn't know and wants to tell him her story. I really thought she's telling her story. He's bringing her to the hospital wing. I'm like, this broad is dying. And she's not dying. She's not. She's all right. Let's see. Hold on a second. So the skies above New Moscow turn a fiery red, we read, as the Potemkin and the flagship of the Romanov dynasty and the Imperial Palace face off in a dogfight. Death and destruction rain down indiscriminately upon the Muscovites. And this is from Tsar Wars by Georgi Lukasevich.
One of the many.
That's George Lucas.
Tsar Wars.
Yeah. Tsar Wars, yeah. It's good. So, anyway, the Tsar, I just had to note that.
It's not good at all.
The Tsar, the Tsar says to unleash the warheads of the Potemkin on his, unleash the warheads on the Potemkin, even if the fallout of the attack destroys his own city and people. Mm. So very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. We love that Tsar. Meanwhile, in the sick bay of the Potemkin, Jocasta begins to tell Dante the story of the Romanovs and the Makarovs, the good and the bad. So, when Jocasta was a child, she and Dmitri were taken from the Romanov family by order of the Tsar before this one, Ivan the Oppressor.
Yes.
They were held hostage to ensure the Romanovs remained loyal to Ivan's rule and docile.
Mm-hmm.
We get some shots of really cute, young, redheaded Jocasta and kind of like pudgy incel nerd Dmitri. It's exactly what you expect.
Yeah.
And Ivan, the oppressor, looks very kind of Baron Harkonnen. He's on a floating throne. And apparently Ivan had also had other non-royal hostages for some reason. And among them were Vladimir, the eldest son of the Makarov mafia clan. So they just, he just takes the mafia's kid too, to be like, you're going to be my mafia or something.
Well, it's like, well,
I feel like it'd be bad to engage the mafia that way.
No, but the whole point of this story, I mean, Nicolai Dante is all about royal families and mafiosi being basically the same thing.
Right.
It's like, you know, you've got the royal families and you've got your organized crime lords and they're all basically the same shtick. So it's like, you want to control them, you do the same things.
So this is Vladimir. This is young Vladimir, who is now the Tsar. Right?
Yeah.
And he's young and blonde and, you know, has kind of a cheesy grin.
Confident.
Confident. And he kind of looks to me like a young Andreas, but apparently he reminds Jocasta of Dante.
Well, I kind of designed him to look like a guy I knew at high school.
Oh, yeah? What guy was that?
I'm not mentioning his name because he might be listening, but it's like he had this sort of cockiness and like some kind of like self-confidence. Privilege.
Why would that be bad if he was listening? I would think that'd be a compliment.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention
him. Okay, then we're not going to mention him.
We're not friends.
Oh. All right. So, Jocasta, of course, falls in love with the one who reminds her of Dante.
Of course.
Of course. And she says he's her first and only love. Burn.
Who?
Burn.
Against her brother?
I mean,
she doesn't love her brother.
She just, I know, but like, it's like she just, I guess not a burn, it's like a self-own, basically. It's like, yeah, I only had one love when I was like 16.
Yep.
That was it.
Yep.
So Jocasta, Dmitri, and Vlad all hung out together as fun little hostages in the Ivan the Oppressor's palace. And they were kind of like, it's kind of like a happier Jon Snow living with the Starks kind of situation. Exactly. It's like they were very happy being hostages.
Yeah. I mean, it's an honor. It's a long and honorable, dishonorable tradition. Sometimes it works out okay. You want to maintain alliances. And the way best way to do that is have these kind of like friendly hostages, you know.
Yeah. So they're treated well.
My young ward.
Right. So then as Jocasta turns 16, the Tsar tries to sexually assault her.
Yep.
Recurring theme here.
Indeed.
In the comic. And Vlad rescues her, burning the Tsar Ivan in the face with a torch. And the three friends, Dmitri, Jocasta, and Vlad, all flee.
Yep.
And in revenge, Ivan destroyed their ancestral homes and killed their families. So he killed the mafia,
I guess. Yeah, or and also the royal families. I mean,
yeah.
What's the difference, really? Ultimately, it's like they're all about, it's all about crime and control, and they're all
criminals and I want to note here that we see Dmitri cry.
Yeah.
Dmitri is crying.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Dmitri has feelings.
He does. This is probably the last time he had any feelings. We're like watching them go away. And apparently this was known as the November Purge. And so these three friends unite the other dynasties. I'm kind of like, which ones? But apparently other dynasties that are kind of like flopping around. The ones that weren't ruthlessly murdered against Ivan and lead a rebellion to challenge him. And Vlad becomes an inspirational leader. And Dmitri, a cold, ruthless military genius. I feel like we've missed seeing that genius, but allegedly he was a military genius. And I mean, I guess he was because they won.
Yeah.
And Vlad strangled Ivan to death with his own hands.
Yes.
Okay. I want to know what Jocasta was doing while they were being military geniuses and inspirational leaders. Like, what was she doing?
She's fine.
Yeah, but like, she's saying how great they both were. It's like, what were you doing, babe?
She's being modest.
She seems, she seems formidable.
She's the queen of espionage.
Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Vlad then wanted to marry Jocasta and rule over the empire. Mm-hmm. But Dmitri was pissed because he was, you know, at the end of the day, Vlad's still a Makarov. Mm-hmm. And the Makarovs, you know, Ivan, mm-hmm. namely, killed... He is a Makarov, right? Or no? He's the son of the crime family.
Makarov crime family.
It's a Makarov crime. Yeah. So the Makarov crime family fed into Ivan the oppressor, right? Or no?
Yeah, they're a vassal.
They're all the same.
Some kind of they're all part of the same.
They're all the same Makarovs.
Yeah, I mean, you just assume.
Is Ivan not a Makarov? Ivan the oppressor.
We don't know what he was. He's never mentioned. He's the oppressor.
Okay.
But we don't. It doesn't matter. The point is that their royal families rule everything, and it doesn't. Crime is kind of irrelevant. Crime is what the families want or don't want.
Right. No, I get that. It's just that Dimitri's objection was because of his murdered parents, like. You know, that Vlad shouldn't be leader. So I assumed it was because he was somehow related to the line that had killed them. But anyway. Mm. So anyway, he objected. And they fight for it. And Vlad wins.
Yeah.
And humbles Dimitri.
Yes.
Doesn't kill him, but gets him on his knees begging for his life.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Jocasta saw in this moment that Vlad had become a monster.
Yes.
His hair has gone white by this point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So she rejects his proposal and launches the plan with her brother to pool their genes to create their screwed up offspring because their family was all. So now we see why we have these incestuous offspring, and it's because the whole family was wiped out. So this is what they're doing to continue the line. They're the only two left. So that makes it like a little less, not a lot less gross,
only
but
slightly.
Maybe marginally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Marginally less gross. You could kind of understand the reasoning there. I love that you... Okay, this is my note here. You can see I wrote it right there. It says beautiful art. That is a gorgeous page.
Thank you. I was like, I mentioned like doing all the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9...
chess pieces?
Romanoff children chess pieces. And Robbie went, 9? Wait, there's only 7. I went, what about the twins? I went, oh, I forgot all about them. I remember that at the time. Like,
he forgot they even existed.
They got killed off so quick.
I know. But it's a beautiful page where we get the outline of Ivan sort of throwing his head back in evil laughter. And inside of his body is sort of, you know, we see the humble Dimitri, you know, sort of walking away and defeated towards his sister. And then their chess pieces are on a checkerboard floor with the Romanov double-headed eagle underneath. It's very, it's a very cool Simon Fraser style composite.
Okay.
Where there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's all still very clear.
Thank you.
I would say that this is one of your biggest strengths is being able to do this.
Thank you, baby.
Because it shouldn't make any sense visually, and it absolutely does.
I mean, the script is well put together.
He's
very good at like organizing information and making sure it's very legible. So it's always very easy.
I don't know how you're drawing these like 5 different scenes and they all make sense, though. That's bravo. It's really nice.
I was having a good art time here. It was like some of it I like a lot. Some of it I'm less happy with. There's some bits of it I'm like,
you got to be good to yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, we have so much more to go. I don't know how we're fitting this all into one episode.
Commander, purge missile on our tail. Evasive action helm. Fighty fight fight. Kaboom, boom, boom.
Just then, the battleship is rocked by the warhead sent by the Tsar. It explodes the entire back half of the ship.
Uh-oh.
And a crew member reports to Constantine that they've lost combat capability.
Oh, dear.
And Constantine orders evacuation, but says he'll stay on the ship's bridge instead of blowing it up entirely. Vlad, on the other end of this fight, decides he wants the ship as a trophy. So I guess this is explaining why he hangs back a little bit when he's got them on the ropes.
Right.
So Dante meets Constantine on the ship's bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And
Constantine casually wipes out some
Constantine tells him he's sending the Potemkin on a collision course with New Moscow, and he'll bail out once the course is set. And they have, Dante and Constantine have this weird, like, friendly talk about how stubborn Jocasta is.
Mm-hmm.
And Constantine says everything good came from his mother and there's nothing he wouldn't do for her. And this is like really sweet talk from a guy who like burns innocent women to death, like for fun.
Yeah.
And the Raven Corps burst onto the bridge, like you say, astride chess horses, and Constantine kind of kills them all with a wave of like his propulsive hand. He sort of backhands them and they all light on fire, dead. And Dante is working up to something, so he starts asking Constantine how many people he's killed. And Constantine, in typical Constantine fashion, with his back to Dante, I guess, setting the course for their collision into New Moscow, monologues about how he doesn't know, it's of little consequence how many he's killed, and he'd have killed Dante long ago if his mom hadn't taken a liking to him. And meanwhile, Dante's creeping up behind him looking murderous. And he again, Constantine again invokes how he killed Juliana, and he will kill Jenna like Dante failed to do. So, like, he's given him every reason to do what he's clearly about to do.
Yeah.
We see the biomech creep up Dante's face, making him look a lot like Dimitri.
Like his daddy.
Yes. Yeah. And the Dante's bioblades go right through the back of Constantine. Like he said earlier, he wouldn't be able to do, and clearly he was able to do. And we get a heroes be damned as Dante shoves the blade through him and Constantine's tongue lolls out and blood pours out of his mouth. And he looks very much like he's dying in a not attractive fashion. We cut to a sky view of New Moscow. And the flaming, falling Potemkin battleship is heading right for the Face Palace. It explodes and Dante escapes on a jetpack.
Thoom.
We get a big, like, what do you call that?
Blast radius. Shockwave.
Yes, that's what I was looking for. And the Face Palace is now just a crater we see filled with water. And the destruction of New Moscow apparently marks a turning point in the war, which is exactly the kind of thing Dmitri said he needed to get the other key strategic regions of the empire to support the Romanovs. And then we cut to the funeral of Constantine in the snow. The family cries. Well, I think actually it's just Jocasta crying. Everyone else is kind of looking sternly on. Andreas looks worried about his mom. And Dmitri eulogizes that Constantine showed them how to be a Romanov. And Dante smiles.
Constantine did show him how to be a Romanov.
He did. Well, I guess this is kind of like Dante losing the last couple parts of his soul or something. We're meant to feel. He's taking on the name of Romanov. He's, you know. I mean, he did. He still was only able to kill him after he talked about how much he enjoyed killing Juliana and was going to kill Jenna and likes killing people. So that's definitely still Dante.
We're given enough
in there
reasons.
So So how do you feel after all that? We made it.
Wow. It's a lot of that one.
Yeah. There's a lot of plot in there. A lot of plot.
A lot of artwork. A lot of drawing because there's a lot of like background stuff and a lot of detail and a lot of fiddling around to do for that. It was quite challenging at the time. I was quite pleased. I'm broadly speaking, pleased with how it looks, though I think there's some panels here and there which are frankly crap, but, you know, that's always the way it goes.
I was going to say, isn't that, like, kind of the way it is?
Yes.
The way the comics biz is?
It is how it is. But it is 20-year-old artwork.
yes.
I'm glad we have better tools now and we've worked out a work plan better and, you know, things generally better.
All right. Well, we are closing the book on Dante for today, but we'll be back next week where we'll be reading One Last Night in the House of Sin and The Beguiling.
The Beguiling.
We hope you enjoyed our podcast. And if so, please subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us ratings and reviews wherever you can, and tell your friends to join the read through. Follow us on Twitter at pod. Oh, I totally said the address wrong before. I said TGDR pod. No, I'm sorry. It's at pod TGDR for the great Dante read through. Let us know what you think of the podcast, of Dante comics, whatever's on your mind. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Thanks for sticking with us. Bye.